to play in the Super Bowl against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Vernon hands the Lynch left side. Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his leg moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run, Lynch. 40. Pushes him at 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go. Touchdown, Seahawks. Oh, my word. A 67-yard run. Marshawn Lynch. Unbelievable. The beast is alive and well.
Wide receivers to either side. Russell takes the snap. He drops back.
To the middle. It's intercepted. Going the other way. He's out across the 30, the 40, midfield, down the far sideline. Is he going to outrun everybody? He is. It's Bobby Wagner from the goal line. 99 yards. He lays down in the end zone. Somebody bring him oxygen.
It has been decided maybe since the safety in the first quarter. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champion.
Ladies and gentlemen, Seahawks and football fans everywhere, a very warm welcome back to the We Talk Seahawks podcast. I hope you've all been doing well. This is getting harder week by week to come on and record with a positive tone. Because the Seahawks are sapping the life out of me this year. I just want the season to be over at this moment in time. The gauntlet is in full swing. It's going exactly the way we all predicted it would go. I certainly predicted it would go this way. I know Mitch thought we'd squeak a win out of it. And we still might. We still might. A few people still think we might squeak a win out of it. I personally don't think so. But the season is looking like it's starting to go out with another whimper. But we're not going to talk about the Cowboys specifically tonight, because the season as a 6-6 football team with the NFC as weak as it is this year, the season is still technically on a bit of a knife's edge. It could go one of two ways. If we do somehow squeak a win out of the next two games, we could be right back in serious wildcard contention. Pez, how are you, mate, in your Christmas jumper that you've so lovely put on for us tonight?
I thought I'd bring some festive cheer to not so much cheery stuff to talk about, really.
That's good. Yeah. That is good.
I'm not too bad. Like, I was surprised when I woke up and I saw the Seahawks at 34-35. And the Cowboys were trailing. I was like, oh, that's fun. And then I realised that, oh, yeah, this team's just the same. They can't have both things at once. One thing has to go to rat shit for the other one to work. So this time it was the offence went off, so the defence decided the start of the year was just a myth. We're not going to do anything anymore, so we're just going to fucking leave it. Tariq Woolen is... I don't know what happened to him. His hands can't keep away from people's helmets and faces. I don't get what the... poo. Poo. That's all it is. Poo. But anyway, other than that, I am grand, as you can see. I'm full of festive cheer. Might not have just sounded like it, but I thought I'd bring the viewers a bear wearing a Christmas jumper and a Santa hat. What else have we got down here? A slutty reindeer whose lights are always on, if anyone knows what I'm talking about. And then some mushrooms. So we've come to decipher that all these animals are on mushrooms for the viewers.
Notoriously synonymous with Christmas, aren't they, bears? And
magic mushrooms as well.
Yeah, magic mushrooms. They are in our house. They might have to be this year on Christmas Eve, I'll tell you what. Okay, now, Mitch, how are you, mate?
Very good, yeah. I'm very lucky that, as well as being a huge Seahawks fan, I'm also an Arsenal fan. We are top of the league and playing well. That's coincided really nicely with the Seahawks, you know, throwing their season away. So yeah, I've distracted myself with English football for a bit.
But, and they did try and give you a heart attack yesterday.
They did. They nearly did. They fully did. That was a near miss. Regarding the stuff you just mentioned there with the Cowboys game, I genuinely thought that we were really in that game till very late on, and that late flag on Woolen was one of the worst and most punishing flags you'll ever see. So I genuinely think that if it wasn't for the awful officiating we saw throughout that game, and it was consistently poor, we actually had enough fight in us and enough on offense actually to put up enough points to be competitive in that game. So I actually came out of that game feeling fairly positive about our chances of doing something with the rest of our year. But at the same time, I feel it is a trap, because even if we got to the playoffs, we'll be one and done, and we'll suffer our draft position and the quality of quarterback we might be able to draft. So I don't know what I want anymore, to be honest. I'm so torn on that.
All I'm going to say with that, it's a trap. I said it in the Discord, and I'll say it on the pod, it is a trap. People are like, oh, 35 points. Wait till the Niners game. We're going to get revenge. Oh, yeah. The offense goes inept again. The defense doesn't know how to tackle anymore. They're like thinking about Christmas Day. And the offense struggled to put up 10 points. And we all come back to reality.
We haven't had a game that looked like the previous one all season.
No.
If we had a terrible game, we haven't had an equally as terrible game or a terrible game in the same way. And if we've had a good one where we've done something well on offense, we haven't been able to repeat what we did well the following game. We might have done something else well, but we've not managed to be consistent in anything all year. There have been games where we've looked like we're completely locked down on defense, and then the next game run defense, you know, goes to shit. The next game the run defense is number one in the league, and then do you know what I mean? Like there's been no consistency on either side of the ball this year. And actually, when I look around at other teams that are doing well, there's one thing that they do consistently well that we don't, and that's getting performances out of their highest paid stars on their roster. And when you look at who we're paying money to, we're not getting... I mean, the recipe is surely to have four or five players on the roster that are well-paid and set the tone, and they have a big influence on the team, and they are your stars. And everyone around them are quality depth pieces and decent-ish rookie classes that can contribute, right? We have a couple of good rookie classes that are contributing, and stars that we're paying that can't consistently put it together, punctuated by DK Metcalf looking like the absolute star athlete that we know he is in one game so far this year, and then threatening to look good the rest of it, you know. So we're paying money to players that aren't fully stamping themselves onto this on this roster, and other teams are getting consistent good performances out of Christian McCaffrey, Justin Jefferson, you know, players like this, you know, Tyreek Hill.
Without going too much over, like too in depth with the Cowboys, because I feel like we're going to go down a really dark hole of no light and we're all going to be very talking like this soon. I'm going to bring in some, I want to start with a positive.
Okay.
And a positive, it always excites me when Jordan Brooks sheds a blocker and absolutely ragdolls someone to the ground, then stomps around like a monster he is. Love that. Love to see it. I watched it about 15 times. It was like a nice light from that game. I was like, yeah, there he is. Do it. I will call it now, and I have not said my favourite saying all season, because like Mitch so said, it's been so fucking wacky. I didn't want to dare say anything, but I'll call it now. Jaxon Smith-Njigba's day is coming, and it's coming very soon. And if I needed to pinpoint a game anyone can hold me on, he is going to destroy the Eagles single-handedly in the middle of the field. All they need to do, and unfortunately, to just spin a bit of a negative, I'm going to do with James, it's spin a negative because this coaching staff is inept. All they need to do is watch that Niners game. The Niners destroyed them over the middle of the field. They absolutely demolish them in the middle of the field. And the Eagles fans are like, James Bradbury didn't let a target or a reception in his... Yeah, because he didn't need to. They fucking mauled you to pieces. And who's getting really good in the middle of the field? Jetson.
Mm-hmm.
So his day is coming. And one last person, and then I'll let you two say whether I'm talking shit or not, Zach Charbonnet. Really, really impressed me against a really hard run D, and he's understanding what needs to be done. I still feel like there's some stuff like kind of what you'd call elite in the NFL, like what Ken has, what a Saquon Barkley has, that home run hitting. Maybe not seen it yet. Maybe that's a year two thing. Like you said, he's kind of like...
I wouldn't say it's part of his game, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think it is. Like, I was just scared because I know the number one Zach fan here might jump through my screen and beat me up or something. But I just don't think it is. But like we said at the very beginning of the season, what I've seen out of Zach gives me a lot of confidence moving forward that him and Ken could, if they can stay healthy, could demolish the league as a running duo because they complement each other so well. And the thing what people need to remember is the game Ken got injured, Ken was doing really well at the things Zach does really well, getting the hard yards up the middle, and he was having a really good start to that game. So if the injury doesn't knock him off and he comes back with that kind of mindset, not just trying to find the big punch, then that's a bright spark going forward.
I agree.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up JSN, because I was going to bring him up tonight as well. Did you know he's only 23 receptions away from breaking the all-time Seahawks rookie receptions record?
That's great. Know what? I didn't know that record, but I did look on, because I was looking through fantasy, and I did look and thought, he's got loads of targets. I didn't realize how many targets he's got. And I watched him in that Cowboys game, again, against a really hard defense, and he was destroying that Bland and the other, their slot corner. He had them on toast. They were all over the gaff. They didn't know what to do with him. They could not handle him. And if this is him just breaking out, building his confidence, you know, Pete's letting the reins go a little bit with him, Gino's getting that chemistry with him, by the end of the year, everyone's going to realise, like, who he is again.
And for a lad that has been pretty much underutilised for the first half of the season, so at this moment in time, he's on 45 receptions for the benchmark here and for the other guys on the list. Tyler Lockett in 2015 had 51. Doug Baldwin, 2011, 51 as well. Daryl Jackson in 2000 had 53. Steve Largin in 76 had 54. DK Metcalf in 2019 had 58. And Joey Galloway is the leader in 1995 on 67. So he's only 23 off breaking that record with five games to go. So do the maths. It's about kind of 4.5 to 5 receptions per game.
Which is
kind of getting, that's utterly achievable. So at the end of the season, the perception will have massively shifted in terms of, like, not that anyone's ever doubted his ability, but just from why can't we scheme this guy into the offense? Where is he? Why are we not using him? To ending the season as our all-time rookie reception leader, it would be a crazy sort of rise from where he was just a few weeks ago to where he's potentially going to end the season. So that's a fascinating, really.
Do you know why I feel like it's coming? It should have happened this game. I don't care what anyone says. Like, that touchdown should have stood.
Yeah.
He caught the ball. He had possession. He's got to survive the ground. And from my understanding, it's if he hits the ground and that ball pops or moves significantly, he's not secured it properly. That ball literally must have moved, if you want to be over the top, about a centimetre. It did not move. He had that thing secured. And then when you get the analysts on, the actual professional reffing rules guy, and go, yeah, that's a touchdown. And they go, No, it's not. That then goes to Mitch about the officiating was just shit all round, but it's coming for him. And do you know why I know it's coming for him? Because he's got that cocky arrogance. He's a quiet off the field. On the field, he's the cockiest guy you'll ever meet in the world. And that's what I loved about him so much in college. And he's feeling himself now. So he will just automatically soon, that chemistry with Gino's growing where he's going to be another scramble piece. Do you know, like, his confidence is growing where he's just going to start ad-libbing his shit. Mm. Like, I just say, I think it's coming soon. He's going to have that big monster game where people are like, all right, yeah, that's what he's about.
Love it. I've got a little stat for you, boys. Yes. Wouldn't be a normal pod if I didn't come up with something. So the Seahawks are the only team so far this year that hasn't conceded a touchdown as a result of a interception. We've not had a pick six from Geno. And after giving away an interception, we're yet to concede a touchdown on the subsequent drive. We've had field goals and stuff, I think.
There's your bet sorted for this week then, Pez. Chuck a tenner on that for Gino or whoever to
pick
throw
six pick for Gino. There yeah, so but I'll back this up with another little caveat, right? So we're the only franchise that hasn't conceded a touchdown as a result of an interception and the drive that ensues afterwards. But here's a nice one for you. We have the most touchdowns conceded after a third or fourth down yellow flag. So there are seven occasions this year where on third down where we would be getting off the field or on fourth down where we would be getting off the field with our defense, we've conceded a yellow flag and extended our opponent's drives and they've scored a touchdown on that drive. So by that, is it safe to say that our ill discipline with yellow flags is more of a factor to us having a bad season than Geno's interceptions and poor play? Because whilst Geno's bad play has been there and he's had some awful, ugly moments, they haven't resulted in touchdowns. They've resulted in some field goals and they've resulted in, opponents being able to burn some clock maybe, or maybe it's been punishing in terms of that when we've been on, you know, trying to score a touchdown or whatever and we've thrown an interception. But in terms of actual conceding of touchdowns, 7-0 in favour of ill discipline and yellow flags. Yeah. It feels like that, though, right? Because you can think of some moments where there's been a face mask, or I tell you another one that's a bad one. The one against the LA Rams with Puka Nacua tripping over himself or over it was Q Diggs, wasn't it? He tripped over Q Diggs, and then the yellow flag was thrown against the corner. It might have been Trey Brown. I can't remember who it was in the corner, but
I think it was Spoon, wasn't it?
Yeah, well that one was terrible. The yellow flag against Woolen against the Cowboys was terrible. The one where they had a PI for about 30 yards and they went on and scored a touchdown on that one. And the other one that was really poignant for me was the there was a hands to the face for Tariq Woolen, which was particularly bad. There was one on Devon Witherspoon where they tangled feet very early on in the year. Do you remember that one where they just... He was in pursuit and they tangled feet and they gave that one as well. That one went for a touchdown. So there's at least three there where you think, well, shit, we shouldn't have conceded a touchdown. And some of these games that we lost on our record, they were only a single score. So we haven't been great, and I'm not defending this, but there's been a bad officiating and bad discipline in our point, and that's contributed to the flags that have killed us for me.
Do you not think it shows the immaturity in the defense, though, or maybe the over-exuberance of the defense earlier, where because they were so, you know, high tempo, third down, that when literally they got a flag, it deflated them to the point where they couldn't carry on going. Whereas if you think the Legion of Boom era with Michael Bennett, who used to just get flagged on everything because he was so eager off the line, it never derailed them. They were just like, right, next play, next play. Whereas this team seems to be like, once they get that flag, it's like deflates them.
But what do you expect from a team that's so predominantly built around a couple of good draft classes? Like you're looking at an inexperienced roster, as opposed to a Super Bowl winning roster that was a couple of good draft classes 3 or 4 years down the line with, you know, playoff experience. You know, it's a little different, I think. You look when you're comparing an experienced team to a couple of rookie class.
But that was my point, Mitch. Like, I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying, are we just basically, you answered my question. Maybe I didn't present it well enough, but was just like, are they just a bit too young?
Yeah.
Inexperienced.
Well, I agree with you. If your point is that we're looking a bit naive, a little bit inexperienced, if you come up against the 49ers, the Eagles, the Cowboys, they're teams that were in their ascendancy or their sort of rebuild where we are now a couple of years ago. They've got a bit more experience. They've got some experienced heads in there. They don't need quite as much coaching, perhaps, because they're a bit more experienced, a bit longer in the tooth, and a few, you know, a few winners in there. We've got a lot of energy and a lot of talent. And if you ever want a casing point to your question there, Pez, think back to the suplex that Witherspoon threw in there. You know, it's a really good example of a bit of inexperience and of getting a bit overexcited. And there's a lot of that running through our team, and I think it undermines us a bit. But it's not to put the blame necessarily for our bad year on the rookies, because I think they've been excellent, and I think last year's rookies as well have been excellent. But that is what we're essentially built around. That's a big part of our team is in first and second year players. So I'm hopeful for our future. I think we've built well with the draft, but you're not going to win Super Bowls off draft classes. You need experienced leaders in there, and you need the players, as I pointed out earlier, the players you're dedicating most of your cap to lead from the front and be those big personalities. And I don't think when you look at Q Diggs, Jamal Adams, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, you know, you look at where the majority of the money is and the productivity we've had out of them, I don't think we've had as good a return as some of our rivals have had out of the players they're paying their money to. So I think I point to that being quite a big factor, I would say.
Yeah. So where do we kind of see ourselves as a team then? Because we're calling this podcast the On a Knife's Edge. So with the five games coming up, where do we kind of see ourselves as the football team that we are? Because for me, I think it's pretty obvious that we've been found out as we're a good team being held back by pretty abysmal coaching, and we're stuck in the Pete Carroll always compete philosophy when we're not complete. For me, what is competing when the teams we're supposed to be competing against don't view us as competition? You can't be competing at that. You can't. We're not competing with the teams that we're supposed to be competing with. They don't view us. The 49ers don't view us as competition. They put 31 points on us. The Ravens don't view us as competition for a Super Bowl down the line. They put 37 points on us. The Cowboys just put 41 points on us. So we're in this philosophy of always compete, but the teams that we're meant to be competing against don't view us as any kind of competition. I think looking back at those score lines, that tells you everything about the team we are at this moment in time, when we've played three genuine contenders and we've had 37, 31 and 41 dropped on our heads. And, you know, yes, we beat the Lions, but they're not really serious contenders. They're a bit like us. They're a bit of a better football team or a better coach football team than we are, but they're not Super Bowl contenders. I don't think Jared Goff will win them a Super Bowl. So against three genuine Super Bowl contenders, we've been beaten pretty comprehensively in two of them, and obviously frustrating, but obviously I'd still have 41 points dropped on our heads against the Cowboys. So with 49ers, Eagles, Titans, Steelers, Cardinals to come, for me, like I said, after the Rams game, and before the Rams game, I said that was the most important game of the season. If we win that, we had the chance of coming out of this next four-game stretch at worst, 7-7. That was the worst we were going to come out of it as a 500 football team, with the Steelers, Titans and Cardinals to finish the season and to secure your playoff spot. Now, we're already 0-2. I don't see us beating the 49ers in San Francisco. We can't beat them at home. We're certainly not going to beat them away. And if anything, the 49ers are a better team than the 49ers that we played 2 weeks ago, because of their performance against Philadelphia the other night. Was just, you know, they firmly cemented themselves as Super Bowl favorites with that performance. And then you've got the Eagles, who are probably next in line, or one of the other teams that are next in line. And I think we'll get a bit of a pacing off them as well. So then you're a 6-8 football team needing to fully win out. And when do we ever say, and you look at it on paper and go, oh, well, that's all right then. What, James, why are you worrying? We go 1-4. Okay, we're 6-8, but then we've got the Titans, Steelers and Cardinals. We'll go 3-0. That's fine. We'll make the playoffs. What are you worried about? Well, what I would say to you is, A, football doesn't work like that. And B, when has it ever happened in Seahawks history where us as fans have said, there's three games. Yeah, we'll win all them. When has that ever happened? When do the Seahawks ever do that for us? When do we ever look at a slate of games and say, oh, yeah, we'll win all of them? They just don't. They don't. It doesn't work like that. They don't do that. So I said it. Like I said, after the Rams game. I said that was it at the end of that last podcast, our Crisis Talks podcast. If you haven't listened to that yet, please do go and give it a listen. It's still fully applicable. It wasn't sort of a game review. We just talked about the problems in general, a lot of Pete Carroll, Shane Waldron stuff. So it's well worth a listen, hopefully, if you haven't had a listen yet. But we all ended that podcast kind of saying, well, what do we think playoffs-wise now? And I think you two boys were still pretty confident we'd make the playoffs. And I said we wouldn't. And I said we'd potentially have a little bit of a locker room, not implosion, but a bit kind of, you know, falling apart a little bit. And then again, I hate to bring it up, but I see the Jamal Adams spat on Twitter going after reporters and you know, he's been rightly fairly criticised and condemned for that. And I was a little bit disappointed that Jamal didn't come out and apologise for that, because I think it was wrong what he did. And the fact he didn't apologise for that has left me a little bit disappointed with Jamal as well. I saw Gino having a bit of a spat on Twitter with another guy, another reporter or something, about his play. So it doesn't look like it's a happy camp at this moment in time. And then it's not going to be if they get beaten. So for the next five games, Eagles, 49ers, obviously, well, 49ers, Eagles, Titans, Steelers, Cardinals. What are we thinking? Is the season on a knife edge, and can we restore it?
For me, just what you said there about the spats. Do you know what this team interests? This team, some of the things they do, what interests me. In a way, it can be a good thing. It can be kind of seen as a good thing, but not with the way they've been playing. Like that whole spatting on the internet and stuff, it's kind of like egos being thrown around, like they think they deserve. Like, yeah, they're only human beings. I do get that. But for what we're talking about right now, they don't really deserve to go around chucking shit like that about. It's like an ego thing. It's like a no, I'm good type of attitude, that my shit don't stink attitude. And it's like, no, but your shit does stink, and it's stinking up all our lives right now. So if that's your attitude, like, oh no, we are the shit, acting like you are the shit, like you're a Super Bowl contender, so you can swan round and give it the big dick, then that's why they're failing at the moment, because they need a reality check, if that's what they're all thinking. They need a solid reality check with that. But back onto what you said about the thing, they beat the Titans, Steelers, and Cardinals. I totally get where you're coming from. Listen, James, I totally get where you're coming from, but them three teams, the Steelers, maybe not. They always, Tomlin does. But if Pickett ain't there, Trubisky will be done, will be toast by that point, because he's that type of quarterback that gets found out after three games of playing full football, right? Them three teams, except for the Steelers, but the Titans and the Cardinals are doing really good jobs of staying competitive but not wanting to win games. So I'm not saying we're going to beat them out of merit. I'm going to say we'll beat them because them teams don't want to win. I don't care what anyone says. Them teams do not want to win. The Titans desperately need to fucking tank as much as they can.
They don't, but I look at that Cardinals game as the last game of the season, especially, yeah, they don't want to win, but they would love to knock Seattle out of the playoffs if it comes to that, wouldn't they?
Well, reality check with that, by that point, we're not going to be able to make the playoffs anyway.
Well, I don't think so, but yeah.
The Packers' schedule running in is they're so favourable in their position. They ain't wielding their spot. I feel like with Justin Jefferson back at the Vikings, that's all Dobbs needs to right the ship, balance it out. He's got enough weapons to play safe. They'll do enough. The Rams have house on us, so they'll do enough. The Cowboys ain't dropping off anytime soon. So realistically, the reality check is people need to get the playoffs out of your head. Like Mitch said before, or you said, we're a one and done team. So it's not really for the rest of the season. Do you know what I really want to see for the rest of the season? I don't, but I do, but I don't, but I do, because I don't like losing. I fucking hate it. So I don't like this. Let's just make the playoffs so we can cheer that Pete's made 17 playoffs in a row. Oh, yeah, let's jack it off because we'll tumble into it like we have the other 15. I think he's only rightfully made the playoffs with any confidence maybe fucking 3 or 4 of the times he's made the playoffs. Otherwise, teams have fucked up so they've let us in. We've stumbled in by accident and opened the door to the wrong fucking convenience store and gone, oh, what am I doing in here? I didn't mean to come in here. I'm in Harrods. I was meant to go to Aldi for my shopping. See you later. No, fucking jog on. We'll kick you out of here. Don't worry. We'll make you look like tits on national TV. It's fine. Wicked every single year. I want the losing season because I'm interested. I'll give you a theory. I've been saying it to my brother for a couple of years now. Everyone says Jody does nothing. Do you know why? Jody doesn't need to do nothing. As long as we stay consistently one and done, the draft stock of the Seattle Seahawks stays nice and level. We surprise a few people this year. Oh, goes up here, goes level. Do you know what happens to, if all the rumours, I don't know her personally, but all the rumours that she's just basically sitting there waiting to get her money and run, sell the team, do one. Do you know someone who thinks like that? Do you know what makes them do something? Is if you have a losing season and potential investors or buyers look at that team and go, that's not the steady ship that I was planning to buy in a couple of years. That's, ooh. Then Jody pipes up and goes, no, you're affecting my money now. So something needs to change. Mm. Something here needs to change because the value of the Seattle Seahawks then goes down. And then you're losing millions. And if it's true what everyone says about her, I'm only speaking in what people talk about her. If it's true that's what she cares about, she will care if after these two last years and the hype we got this year in the media, if we have a losing season, I'm very interested to see what happens in this offseason. Because then she's got one more year to right the ship.
Yeah.
And then she has to listen because then that directly affects her. It directly affects people who have got their money in the team who are looking to pay out, cash out, do one, run. It affects all them boys. And when money gets involved, that's when shit starts getting thingy. So my competitive side says, no, I want to find a way to fucking get this working. But then my other frustrated side, what anyone who's followed us from the very beginning would have heard year in, year out, is like, fuck this shit. I want change. It's done. It's winding me up. Now, just to add on to that, something for Mitch, because I tried finding it, but you're the stats man, Mitch. Can you, if you could find it or direct me to where I could look for it, what our tight end usage has been for the whole time Pete Carroll's been at the team?
What, for targets in the passing just game?
Any major stat, any major involvement for a tight end? Because the thing that I'm looking at, they said it in the crisis talks about this team. They like to put pretty little masks on, delude us into, oh, isn't that a pretty little thing? And then, oh, no, you don't look that pretty. Oh, no, shit, it's the same ugly thing I've seen 15 times already. Ah! Baldrin, Gino, Jeff, Bob, the cleaner, the strength and conditioning coach. None of it fucking matters because there's one man who's still there and My whole thing with the tight end usage is when we used it this year, we looked really serviceable. But then we'd always go away from it. From my just recollection, it got me thinking, my recollection is, when have we ever used a tight end usage whilst Pete has been here?
We don't. We traded for Jimmy Graham and then didn't use him. And so we've never used a tight end. But it's interesting that before I bring Mitch in there, because I was kind of going to sort of, it's what I was alluding to as well before I came to you, Pez, in the sense that Pete Carroll's always compete philosophy is actually doing us more damage now by having that, because is that always compete, we always want to win, but we're not like I've said before, and you know, when I said, you know, the teams that we're meant to be competing with don't view us as competition, what I mean by that is, when if we to get to the playoffs, we are going to get one and done. It really, we're going to get one and done. We might squeak past another horrendous wildcard team, but as soon as we come up against the Lions, Eagles, whoever, 49ers in the playoffs, we're going to get beat. So we're not winning. So that being stuck there this moment in time actually does us less good than losing would, because obviously, like you say, we'd get a higher draft pick by losing. It's not, it is tanking, but it's not real. We're not tanking the season. We're just accepting that we're not going to make the playoffs, so we may as well, you know, lose. And I'd rather see that. Because that, yes, it is losing, but that is what a smarter franchise would do. It's a self-aware franchise. That is what a smarter team would do. Is to get your higher draft picks, move up the draft board, because we're not going to do it. But Pete Carroll won't do that. He won't accept that. That's not his philosophy. And that, I think, actually, as a team going forward, and like you say, for the draft next year, is actually doing us potentially more damage right now. But Mitch, Any thoughts on anything myself and Pez have said, and what are your thoughts for this 5-game running?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get some stats for Mr. Pez here about tight end targets. I'm getting some great info here. So just hang
on. On a side note as well, well, I thought Noah Fant, when we actually used him in the Cowboys, I thought Noah Fant was excellent. That catch he made across the middle of the field was excellent, wasn't it?
Honestly,
yeah, very good.
Whilst you're still, if you've not found what you're looking for yet, Mitch.
Oh, I found it. I found it. I'm just memorizing the data. Just bear with me.
You see his eyes start flickering soon. If you look really closely when you're watching YouTube, you'll be like,
taking screenshots with his eyes.
Scanning. I've checked stats over the last 4 years for percentage of targets that go to tight ends. Right. So this year, we're averaging 6% of targets going to tight ends, which is nuts, actually. And if you flick through 2022, 2021, 2020, you start to see percentages like 13 and 8 and 7. So this statistically over the last 4 years is by far the least percentage of targets for tight ends in comparison to wide receivers and running backs. So you are absolutely right that this is a 4-year low in terms of amount of targets that go to tight ends. However, it is the first season in a while that we've had an actual slot receiver which would always have taken targets away from tight ends. So There is a reason for slightly lower. However, the amount that it's lower is fairly dramatic, actually.
So my point to that was, what got me thinking is, this isn't pardoning Waldron, because like we said in the crisis talks, they're all in it together. They're all in the boat, and I'd love to smash a hole and sink everything. But this goes to show, in my opinion, people who think that Waldron's genuinely got the control of the offense, the keys to the car, this shows me that he hasn't. Pete doesn't, just like memory, and then you add them percentages in, Pete doesn't like using tight ends. But then when the tight end's heavy usage, I actually think that's a Waldron thing, because you look at his history. He has history with the tight end, so he knows how to use a tight end, because that's where he started in the tight end coaching world. So surely he has that experience. One thing Pete doesn't like doing is using a fucking tight end. So, yes, even though Waldron is bad, Waldron is just another curtain. He's just another skirt piece for us all to get excited about because of where he came from. But he's just another fall guy. He's just another fall guy. And yes, everyone, please, let's go to Waldron's house and burn it down. Hopefully his wife and kids aren't in. Let's just take the man out himself like we all want to do. Let's get rid of him and let's get all dead excited when the next guy comes in. And then watch him fail as well. Watch him go down as well. Simple. Watch him go down. Look at the ones who actually succeeded in this team. They eventually left and people scratched their head. Defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators. Why the fuck's he been sacked? Why has Rashard been sacked? He's the best DC we've had in fucking years since, Dan Quinn disappeared. Do you know why? Because they're too opinionated. They have too many opinions. Let's get a Waldron in. What were people's issues with him when he first came in? Never really been offensive coordinator before. He's massively been promoted. But he comes from the Waldron tree. So he's going to bring some Gucci, savvy, little sexy stuff with him. No, he's not. He's just a fucking apprentice. So Pete can shadow what he wants to do in new, magical, sexy ways. But what happens to this fucking football team is we revert back to everything again. Hence why when anyone goes on about Gino or anyone goes on about Waldron or anyone goes on about Clint Hurt, no. It's one single man who's at top of the mountain and that mountain needs chopping down and unfortunately he needs to go to the abyss. Doesn't mean I hate him. Doesn't mean I'm disrespecting what he's done for this franchise. But fuck me, when is people going to realise the man needs to just retire? Give it a rest.
Can you imagine the conversations we're going to have when that day eventually does come and we do have another head coach? I'm envisioning the podcast and the conversation we could have when we never have to mention Pete Carroll. We will still mention him, but never have to mention within the context.
We want him back. I can't wait to eat my hat.
When his fucking son Nate becomes head coach, when he
gets Oh my god!
He'll be the offensive coordinator. You wait and see.
Jeez. But yes, Mitch. Any thoughts, mate?
Yeah. So we're going to go 9-8. I think we will still manage to scrape. We will scrape a winning record, and it'll upset me because in honesty, I'm at a point where I don't think we're going to do much in the playoffs if we do get there. By the way, I'm not sure 9-8 gets us into the playoffs, but it might just about.
I think it probably will.
And at that point, I'll be disappointed because I really want to see us pick up someone in the draft that will really sort of make a difference to this roster, whether that's a quarterback or whatever else you want to draft at that, you know, in a higher position. I want to see us pick in the top 15. Which I think we can still do with our record as it is. But if we win three games, I think we might be picking 18, 19. Because if we just miss out on the playoffs, we'll be just shy of the 20 mark, won't we? I do think minimum, I think the worst we'll do is an 8. I think the best we can do is probably a 9. I'm with you, James, in that I don't think we will win end of season ones. I think we might somehow sneak one of the two tough ones and throw away maybe the Arizona game. We just make an absolute hash of. It would be from my Seahawks experience, I think we'll find a way to win one of the tough ones and we'll absolutely throw away one of the easier ones. But I still think we'll end up either 8-9 or 9-8 this year. And My overall outlook on the way the season's been, I think we've seen some really promising stuff from some players, and I've seen some really disappointing stuff from players who I thought should have really started to have a larger impact on our roster, and they haven't. So that's my look at it.
The main thing is for me that's getting me through these last few, it's the youth talent, isn't it? The young talent we've got in this team is what is getting me. It's what's getting me excited for the future, because we are still pretty confined that Pete Carroll will still be here next year until 2025. So that it is to get me through the next few weeks, and then probably, like I say, in all likelihood next season as well, it's this continued development and nurturing of these young talent, because like I say, eventually Pete Carroll will not be here, and the young talent that we are bringing through is so exciting for when that day eventually comes and someone else can come and work with that. If we can just keep producing this talent until that time comes, that's the main thing for me.
The only thing, I do agree. I think the foundations that have been set by the way we've drafted over the last 2 years gives us a really, really exciting outlook. And also, if you're going to bring in a rookie quarterback to take over,
Penix,
what you really want is a couple of good draft classes, especially in the trenches, before they come in. And I think we've had that. So honestly, if there is like a 3-4 year plan for this, I feel like we're kind of weirdly on ahead. We're probably ahead of the curve. But a proud franchise like ours wants to be winning playoff games and a roster built on draft classes alone is not going to be the experienced, savvy, get over the line kind of roster that you need it to be. So we are what we are, and it's exciting for the future. We're not quite ready yet, and this year I hope we don't tack on too many wins and still get one and done and miss out on a player in the draft that could really be a fantastic piece to add to what we've currently got. That's where I'm at, and I don't ever want to see us lose a game. I'll never celebrate us losing a game or tanking it, but in a way I'm just kind of, I feel like we're going to fall into mediocrity land and suffer a draft disappointment as a result, if you see what I mean.
I'm going to pause one final question to end the pod on, and that is, I know we keep saying, and I've said it, and this is what I believe as well, that, you know, if we were to make the playoffs, that we probably, in all likelihood, will get one and done. But now this is a very, very big but, which I know we all probably like.
We do.
If in some crazy fucking random Seahawks world that we all know fine well that we live in and exist in, the simulation that it is, if we were to somehow beat the 49ers this weekend, would that in any way change the outlook for you guys in terms of, would we get one and done? If we beat the 49ers, could we go on a run? Have we got? Or would you still think?
Yeah,
it would.
It would. For me. And I'll tell you why. But before you go, Pez, one thing. The only time we've played a team this year and been thoroughly blown out was the Ravens. And to a certain extent, the 49ers in our home game. We lost to the Bengals, but we stayed in the game, right? We lost to the Cowboys, but we stayed right in the game. If we were to win one or two of our next two games, then we would have shown that we can go toe-to-toe with that caliber of team sometimes. And if you get red hot towards the end of the season, I mean, that's the time to get good, right? So it would give me a far more belief, genuinely, because we've come close at times this year. Do you know what I mean? There have been games where we've come close.
For myself, I was thinking this before, actually, so it's great you've brought it up so I can say my theory on this. This is the perfect time to beat the Niners.
Why am I getting confident again?
No. This isn't a positive. Don't worry. I'll take the rug out of you from underneath your feet.
Good lad.
This is meaning, this is, again, another perfect Seahawks trap, another perfect Pete Carroll trap, what he lays all the time. What I mean by this is the perfect time to beat the Niners is because what they just did to the Eagles, we are nothing to them because of what they just done to us. We're nothing. They're flying high. They're loving it. And what does Pete Carroll do the best? When a team's flying high, he finds a way to bring them back down to earth by a dogfight where he ends up winning. I could see that happening, but it's a trap because then you'll go into the Eagles game and everyone's like, we've just done the Niners and they're the fucking favourites. And then we get donkeyed. And I mean, shit on. from every single level. And then, oh, back down to earth again.
So
that's, I could see it happening. I could see us, I genuinely, no, it doesn't matter, because what I've been needing and wanting to see was what I saw in the Cowboys game. Now, let's see if the coaching staff is actually broken and they can't keep it going. Because that's what Geno did so well last year. Geno had that game. He's got his get right game. And then he was firing again. He's not even fired this year yet. He's not even really got firing this year. So even though a part of me does still, my competitive nature does still think, I genuinely still stand on that this team is a few links in the chain from connecting together before it goes, voila. Maybe not all the way to the end, but at least winning the game, the wild card in the playoffs. I do genuinely still think there's enough talent on this team for them change just to stick together. That could have been that Cowboys game where they're like, all right, so all along we should have just done it that way. And then we get 35 points. So let's try that again. They don't fill me with confidence, but I could also see that happening. I just think when it comes to the playoffs, I will say what I've said for the many years, Pete Carroll, because I still don't believe Waldron runs this offense. Pete Carroll runs this offense. And when it comes to the playoffs, he big brains it and he fucks it up because he can't compete against these young, offensive-minded head coaches who like to do things new and modern. His old way of doing it when it comes into the playoffs stinks. So
to clarify, if we aren't going to beat, if we beat the 49ers, you're still not, that's not going to change.
It's a trap. It's the biggest trap. It's the biggest trap he's laid all year.
Okay.
But with a caveat that I do still believe, like Mitch said, this team could potentially be a couple of links in the chain from exploding.
That's how I feel. I think it you can win on any given Sunday, but I think in reality the team is, yeah.
The old favourite NFL saying from last year, they've got enough players on that team who've got that dog in them. Like it? No, but they do. JSN's starting to get his attitude swagging. Spoon's always got his attitude swagging. These things start working. This offense starts clicking. The defense starts seeing that we're not just having to do it all by ourselves. That could bring everything together. I just don't believe it because I've not seen it.
Okay, well, let us pray for a miracle, whether you're religious or not, and hope that next week's podcast is going to be a very, very interesting one for all the right reasons. Like I say, I'm not confident, but hey, like I've said before, we live in a fucking weird Seahawks simulation where anything can and anything does happen. Do you want a final word there, Pez?
Like us, recording a podcast under an hour.
Hang on, don't hold your breath. We're on 53 minutes, see it?
53 minutes, but the first couple of minutes of that, we were still talking shit. So
we're still talking shit.
Yeah, I was going to say, just the first minutes.
I'm pointing up here because I've got the timer on my screen and I was amazed. So miracles can happen, everyone. It's not an hour and a half like normal.
You've got your Christmas jumper on, Christmas miracles. What are you? You've done it to me. You've done it to me. You've sprinkled the confidence. I don't know why you do this to me. It's so obvious that we're getting tonked, but I'm gonna believe in a miracle at this festive time of the year. But yeah, it'll be a very fun, very interesting podcast if we do end up. It'll be a fun and interesting podcast if we don't. It's always fun and interesting with us at the We Talk Seahawks podcast. And I thank you, as always, for choosing to tune in with us. We love you one and all, whether you catch us on the airwaves or on YouTube. We don't care how you get us. We're just grateful that you're here. For now, you can head over to social media, Twitter, XYZ, whatever it's called, Instagram, TikTok. You will find us there. If you just search We Talk Seahawks, you can find the link to our Discord in our pinned tweet. Great little community, as always. Fun time of year to be talking shit about the Seahawks, and you won't get shut down for talking shit about it. You will be lifted up for it. We encourage you to do so. So please go ahead, hit that link and join the Discord if you're not already. But stay tuned. We'll be back to talk all things Seahawks and 49ers at the conclusion of that one next week. But until then, it's Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Hawks.